I need something funny to say because you were funny last time. We can keep that in the start.
No pressure.
Yeah, none whatsoever. Good afternoon. Welcome to episode number 2 of the premier wrestling gaming podcast, or hopefully soon to be
premier,
with myself, the more northern than I thought I was, Joshua Richard.
I didn't really realize how northern you were until I listened to this back.
I know, and I did feel it necessary to listen to my own.
Oh yeah, of course. Back, get a soothe feel for the it. Ego.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the man next to me on my bed, no less, I'm sure his lovely wife, who may or may not listen to this, would be delighted to hear that, is the ever delightful Mr. Simon Kane.
Hello. Yeah, mouthful of tea.
Hello, Josh. How the devil are you today?
I'm very well, Josh. I've had a lunchtime pint.
We have.
It's a Sunday.
Life couldn't be better.
Life could not be better. You did something exciting a few days ago.
Yesterday, I made the decision. I was at my work Christmas do, which is not the exciting thing. That was just full of low value alcohol and a lot of failed dreams realized in one room.
What kind of dreams were you trying to realize at your work Christmas do?
I think it was more a case of a lot of people realizing that they work for the company they work for and not, is this what we wanted to do with our lives?
Do people you work for listen to this?
They know who they are, if not. Okay. So. But yeah, I was remarkably hungover yesterday. So took the decision whilst in a hungover state, wondering about the weird notion of Black Friday and why the hell it has anything to do with us. Thought, I'll check out Amazon just to have a brief glance. And unfortunately, the bastards have put on really good deals, haven't they? Yeah. So I've kind of walked away with PlayStation 4 finally. You know how long I've been talking about this for.
And I would have some kind of, not sympathy for you, but you did say that you'd had this PS4 in your Amazon basket.
I did.
For at least a fortnight.
Yep, correct.
So it's not like you've kind of just randomly decided,
no,
I'm going to buy a PS4.
Admittedly, I did take the bundle out that was in there initially and got this new bundle instead.
Because it was cheaper?
Yeah, it's cheaper and it came with more things. Huh. So for those of you that are vaguely interested, I've walked away with the 500 gig bundle, not the pro version because it's all extra monies and stuff, isn't it? I'm also playing Burnout Paradise as we speak. Yeah, so
all the sort of squeaking that you might be able to hear.
Yeah, it's my useless controller.
It's nothing to do with us both being on Josh's bed.
No, that's just completely different matter entirely. I've watched 500 gig, Uncharted 4, FIFA 17, and Overwatch, which I'm most excited about.
Having
played it at yours and been god awful at it, but I'm gonna have to grind my way into some sort
Overwatch
of,
friends,
some sort of talent. Yeah, Overwatch buddies for life.
That's gonna be fun.
Yeah, so that. I'm pretty excited. I'm gonna finally be
Josh has a PS4.
Yeah, finally gonna be at the current zenith of computing,
yeah,
rather than this very old Xbox 360 that I've
you've got this Xbox and I've still got mine sort of hooked up to my TV.
Yeah,
there was something really special about the 360. It was kind of the premier console. I mean, obviously it came out at the same time as PS3,
mm-hmm.
but it had something that the PS3 never did, and it was just this kind of panacea of a console that just everyone could find something that they enjoyed with it.
So yeah, the only reason I'm playing it is because, funnily enough, I flicked on Sky Go the other day to watch Westworld again, which I discussed last week.
How's it going? How are the robots?
Oh, shit went absolutely down. Something that I should have very obviously seen coming happened, and I lost my shit. I texted my friend from work who watches it, inquiring as to why I didn't see this coming already. But yeah, shit's just got very real. It's still excellently done. I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to possibly tie it all up in the 3 episodes that are remaining. So,
would you recommend sort of watching it now or maybe waiting for the whole thing to be done?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, it's only 10 episodes long. So if you wait, you're going to be able to smash it quickly. But yeah, funnily enough, I was getting ready to watch it and the adverts were there, the kind of ones you have to negate to get to what you're after. And they've just announced that Burnout Paradise is now backwards compatible on the Xbox One.
That's cool.
So I was like, do you know what? I'm pretty certain I own that game.
Take a trip.
So yeah,
down memory lane.
I've forgotten how fucking enjoyable this game is. The thing that I love about this game more than anything is the notion of speed on it is like unlike any other game I've played. Even though you're not just literally smashed into a wall while I'm talking there.
Yeah, it is, but it's down in a minute.
The thing with this game is if you're coming over a blind hill, you are in the lap of the gods. If you're boosting, if you're going anything resembling quick speed. And I've played games that are, you know, claim that they go faster, or, you know, your F0Xs, your wipeouts that, you know, you're looking at unfathomable speeds. But Burnout is just, it's quick like nothing else. It feels like you are genuinely out of control at points.
I remember playing this, you say it came out in 2009?
Yeah, so this is 2009, but I was Burnout 2, I think, on the PS2 originally. The best thing about it is not only is the speed when you're racing, but it appeals to that kind of like destruction derby element as well, which I grew up playing on the PlayStation 1, or just PlayStation, where, you know, you do have bits where it's just the aim is to smash through a thing, or literally cause as much drama as you can at one intersection. So it fits all the bills of what you want out of a racing game, and does have bits where you can
even fall off a cliff
trying to do a super jump. Yeah,
I just remember playing this and just having that feeling of just being a bit out of control and just kind of I'm just guiding this car. I'm not in control. It's going fast, and I'm just trying to avoid as much stuff as possible.
Yeah, it goads you into doing these things. It's like, oh look, here's this bit that's kind of boarded off. Go and do the jump, which I think I'm just about to crash and The best thing about it, and the thing that fucks you over and will keep you coming back, is you'll go over a super jump, but it's not like you have this nice little soft bit to, you know, land in and have all the time in the world just to sort yourself out.
Here's another.
You're literally coming like straight back into oncoming traffic. You know, you have to keep your wits about you. There's no point where you can just sit and go, oh, this will be fine, I'll just not concentrate for a second.
Yeah. Because it is pretty relentless.
You will drive into this, that and the other within seconds of landing, and the game will be like, oh yeah, you failed at that, try again. By the way, there's like 400 of these things, keep going. So it just brings you back, and I think the decision to make it open world, someone deserves a nice little
pat on the back for that. So yeah, that was quite fun. It kind of makes me think about something that I meant to mention last week about kind of the direction of this podcast. I realised when we were talking about games last week, you know, we were talking about Skyrim and things, that just in case people were wondering, this isn't really going to be a cutting edge, this is a game that came out like 2 days ago, or, you know, there are places on the internet and there are, you know, avenues you can get that kind of cutting edge games news. This is more just going to be, this is shit we like.
Yeah.
And some of it's going to be old, some of it's going to be quite new, some of it's going to be from, like, the last generation, like Burnout Paradise. And also, we're not really going to waste a lot of time talking about stuff we don't like. I mean, I've noticed recently, because internet, there's a lot of people that use the kind of comment sections on articles on wrestling and video games just to bitch about stuff.
Yeah.
And just be down on stuff and, you know, complain about why this has been done the wrong way, you know, booking decisions in wrestling and why they've decided to do certain things with video games.
Yeah.
I don't want to kind of contribute to that. You know, I don't want to be part of that culture. I think there are enough places, if people want that, that they can find it. And I'd really like this to be just something that we can celebrate stuff that we enjoy, like good wrestling matches and good video games and stuff we enjoy that isn't necessarily, you know, super current or super cutting edge, because, you know, we've got jobs as two guys with responsibilities and jobs. We can't really keep up with every week there's a new game coming out, and but just in case people were wondering, we are just going to talk about all the stuff that we enjoy.
Yeah, and I think that's not to say that we won't come at things with a critical eye. You know, think if anyone that listened to the first episode, well, you know, certainly when the main basis of the podcast was us taking you through NXT's latest takeover, and, you know, there were some things that we would have liked to have seen differently, or we didn't rate particularly highly, but, you know, so there is going to be certain things that we discuss that maybe we're going to not be 100% fans of, but, you know, we made a conscious decision that we don't want to be sat here being those guys that bitches about No Man's Sky.
And just kind of complains for the sake of it.
Do you know what? Complaining's not fun. It's not fun. You know, we want this to be something where we go, look, do you know what? I dug this game out that I've not played in several years. Let's talk about that for 5 minutes just because. Just because we want someone to go, Oh, do you know what? Hell, I've not played that in ages. Yeah. I've got that.
Hopefully someone maybe listening to this might have this kind of tucked away.
Yeah.
Or they're going to go, you know what, I'm going to play that for
I stumbled minutes. Across this film. I watched this wrestling match from, you know, 1999 because of childhood nostalgia. Yeah. That's going to be the focus. So it's not going to start with every episode with me playing some random game from...
No, it might. It should
maybe, maybe it will. Maybe it will. Maybe I'll do that each time. I'm trying to look through my...
You've got some pretty...
Yeah, there's nothing really that new. I think the newest one I've got is GTA 5.
Current classics? There's Red Dead.
Yeah, Red Dead. I need to play that before.
Have you not played that?
Because Red Dead 2, oh my God.
Have you still not played the first one?
I'm nowhere near through. I'm honestly embarrassingly 20-25%.
You need to do that because actually there's a... One of the questions I want to sort of answer from last week kind of touches on Red Dead. Two people asked a reasonably similar question. I think Aviv and Gary were both asking about what's your favourite video game soundtrack. It took me ages to think about this, but I think I've got one. There is a moment in Red Dead Redemption. You have achieved the aim that the whole game has been leading towards.
Mm-hmm.
You
are redeemed.
Yeah, you are redeemed. And you think, right, the game should finish now. But it doesn't. And you have to go back to your family. And then this piece of music plays, which... I will kind of put this in the notes, the song that it is, but it's just the perfect moment of, I can't really describe it. It's an indescribable moment, and it really is. And I know this goes back to what we were talking about last week about, you know, games being more than just shooting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really kind of emotional moment
in
the game, because obviously it's an open world game and a lot of it is you just dicking about. And sort of taking the long road to get to places because, oh, what's over this hill? Or I might go off and do this.
Yeah.
But that was the first moment when this song comes on. And you've got this, the one objective you have is go and see your family. It was the one moment where I didn't want to take the long route.
Yeah.
You were sort of determined to get home as soon as you could.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though obviously nothing would happen. You weren't on a timer.
No.
But I was just compelled
to... But the game, forced you to... To feel in a very similar way to the
urgency
protagonist.
Of, you know, I've done this, I've finished my mission, if you want to call it that, and now I've got to get home as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And it was a really lovely moment, which actually has reminded me of something else. Max Payne 3 has an amazing soundtrack.
I've never played that.
You should. More importantly, you should listen to the soundtrack.
So
it's awesome. The soundtrack to Max Payne 3, kind of contrary to a lot of games where you get a composer, someone who composes for video games to make video game music.
Yeah.
Max Payne 3's soundtrack was done by Health. It's like an LA-based like electronic band.
Okay.
And it's really fucking cool.
Sick.
There is something about getting a band to do a soundtrack, which just gives the game a different, really different flavour.
Yeah.
And again, there's a moment which, you know, I won't go into, but there's a moment sort of halfway through that game where... The use of this licensed piece of music really does something to elevate the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
In a similar way to the Red Dead event, I suppose, kind of compels you to move forward, creates this kind of urgency in the game. And I really enjoyed that.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I was thinking back and I was trying to, you know, go through my youth and games consoles I've had in the past. And, you know, I kind of went down a slightly less travelled route in my console choices. I had a Nintendo 64, which to this day is still my favourite console I've ever owned in terms of the game, the number of games that had both the pick-up and play of I've got 10 or 15 minutes just to do something or something longer haul, you know, your Ocarina of Time, and, which is still incredible. But I was trying
I've
to
never
think,
played that.
You've never played
I've Ocarina? Never played Ocarina of Time.
Well then I need to get my 64 from home and then we need to see.
I realise my kind
that.
Of cred has kind of dropped significantly.
Yeah, you anyway. that needs to happen. That's just
I've
a
never played
thoroughly
it.
Wonderful
I've,
game.
I've never been a Nintendo fan. I think it's just because I've never had a Nintendo console.
Yeah, there you
so
go.
I've never played a Zelda game.
My 64 was life when I was a kid. But I sat there and I was trying to think of the scores to games that I played, you know, Zelda's, GoldenEye, Banjo-Kazooie. But funnily enough, when I was a kid, because I was trying, I don't actually really remember the music in these games. But what I used to do, because I'm hugely into my music, was I always had music on.
Yeah.
Whilst playing games. So I never heard the score. It also meant when I was playing fucking Zelda, I didn't have to listen to be like, hey, listen, every fucking 5 minutes. Stupidly, like, I can actually equate games that I played as a kid to albums that I listened to.
Actual music that you were listening to all the time. That's really interesting.
When I think of Ocarina of Time, all I can think of is the Manic Street Preachers album that had If You Tolerate This, Your Children Will Be Next on it, the name of which I can't remember.
We really should research this shit before we talk about it.
We should be testing our own.
I want to find out the name of that Red Dead song.
So yeah, so funny enough, from that era, I don't really remember anything. And then I got a Dreamcast, which I think is underrated. I think it took a lot of shit, and it struggled in terms of licenses, in terms of, it didn't have your FIFAs and the like, so it had like Virtua Soccer or whatever, which was absolute dog shit. But there's a couple of games I played on that I utterly adored. And at this point, I remember listening to the music. One was Jet Set Radio.
I loved Jet Set Radio.
Which is a game I absolutely loved. Just the premise was new. Again, the speed, once you got things going on, once you got into certain grind situations and stuff, yeah. It was colourful, the art direction was beautiful, and the music was just so different. There was so much going on. Very Japanese.
Yeah.
And then also, one of my all-time favourite games, one of the games because I'm not really a completionist, I'm really shit at getting a game and thinking, right, I need to get to the...
I think that kind of happens to everyone, though. When in my youth, I was very much a kind of, I have this game, I'm going to play this game, I'm going to finish this game, and then I'm going to play another one. And I keep trying to do that with games now.
Yeah.
I'm going, I'm just going to play GTA 5 until I finish it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to play this until I finish it. But
then I'll look at those other things.
Yeah, and games now are so fucking big and long that I can't spend 50, 60, 70 hours in one game and just play that. Unless it's Skyrim.
Yeah. So this game that I was playing, this is the last one where I really remember thinking, right, I'm going to play this from the start, I'm going to try and finish it. It was called Shenmue. And the sound direction and everything that was just brilliant because there were so many different things going on. You know, there was day-night cycles. Pretty sure there were seasonal cycles as well. And you had to do so many different things, or you could choose to do so many different things. So, like, you had to go to work, and that had a whole look and feel to it.
Yeah.
Or you could go to the arcade and play, you know, play a guy playing a game.
Yeah.
And that went totally 80s. But also there was seriously emotive scenes going on. I remember playing that game, and I must have been 14?
2000.
Yeah, something like that. And just, falling in love with that game from start to finish. And it's one of the first games where I felt a real sense of, dumb as it sounds, a real sense of achievement by winning at the end, because you have to fight like 100 people. So obviously you build up your...
You become this...
Martial arts as you go through. And you have to fight literally 100 people in one go. I remember completing that thinking, fuck, yeah. And then it has an open ending, and you're like, wait, fuck, is there going to be a second one?
Uh-oh.
And there was, which pretty sure came on about 3 discs, which at the time was just like, fuck, oh my God, this is going to be like...
This is going to be amazing.
The biggest thing ever. But I don't think I ever completed that. But obviously they announced that
they're developing.
Yeah, there's like a Kickstarter, which has got shitloads of money. But
of course,
I'm so worried that's going to be absolute shit.
It's going...
Because I don't like people taking bits from my childhood and thinking, let's do that again.
Yeah,
there's so many things that have...
There's a nostalgia to stuff that it's difficult to capture again, isn't it?
Yeah, to capture the essence of it, to capture the characterization again.
Yeah, and there, you know, you fall in love with these games at certain points in your life. You were really into Shenmue or whatever when you were younger, and then trying to then go back to that.
Yeah. Say, and make 30, nearly 30 year old me fall back in love with it.
Years later, and try and capture the same thing and make you feel the same thing. It's often not successful.
Mm.
I've actually realised the name of that song, which you should definitely look up, is Jamie Liddell, Compass. So if you give it a Google, Jamie Liddell, Compass, Red Dead, should give you the kind of gameplay scene. It's really good, really affecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're talking a lot about like nostalgia stuff. And there is a game I've been playing that sort of tries to attach itself to you in that way.
Okay.
I've been playing Life is Strange. Have you heard of Life is Strange?
I think it's the girl, the photography.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I've vaguely seen like the odd clip or the odd, I think, spoiler.
Yeah.
But I've never played it, so.
It's very much in the kind of Telltale.
Yep.
Walking Dead. It's an episodic. It's all out.
Oh, fuck The Walking Dead, man. That game. Like,
that game made me cry.
Yeah.
Season one of The Walking Dead. The only game to make me cry.
Yeah, way to make me feel feelings.
Feels. But I have it on good authority that this is also similarly affecting by the end.
Oh, no.
So I've only played the first episode because I realised I was sort of on a hunt for like new fun games to play to fill some time. And the first episode of Life is Strange is actually out for free on all consoles, I think.
Oh, excellent. Current gen, free things.
Current gen and last gen and PC. Sweet. And Linux and Mac. So you've got no excuse not to play it.
Damn right.
So yeah, it's a episodic choose-your-own-adventure, kind of very much the Telltale Walking Dead style,
yep.
About a girl in an American college who can rewind time.
Right,
so
okay.
That's the kind of main gameplay kind of crux is,
yep.
you go through this story and make decisions, but you can rewind time. There's a weird sort of supernatural element to it as well, so there's kind of some big apocalyptic event,
yep.
that happens, so I get the feeling that, you know, you're going to be charged with trying to stop it or work out why it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I've only played the first episode. I've got to be honest, when I started, I had a really weird relationship with the game. Do you know films like Garden State and Juno,
yeah.
that kind of like mid-2000s indie wank, right?
Whoa.
I love those films.
I was going to say, if you're calling Juno wank,
now,
then this podcast might have to end
this is
episode
the, like,
two.
Is what you were saying about...
As everyone's had an opinion, that opinion is wrong.
You know, your opinions of self are based on the time in your life that you experience them.
Yep.
So if Life is Strange came out, say, 10 years ago, you know, when I was like 19, 20, I'd have ate that shit up. I'd have been all over it.
Yeah.
Right? Because you've, just starting at university, you're trying to, you want to look cool and you want to look cultured and you want to make reference to things that maybe you're not really that into, but you want to reference them anyway because it makes you look cool. So the beginning of Life is Strange, within about 20 minutes, if that, so the first scene. That fucking game, it name drops Alfred Hitchcock, John Lennon, Andy Warhol, J.D. Salinger.
Right, okay.
The main character's name is Max Caulfield.
Right.
And she's got a picture of Andy Warhol stuck in her locker. It felt really on the nose.
Right.
Really sincere. Like, it wasn't doing it in a kind of cynical way or
mm-hmm.
kind of hipster way. It felt really sincere, but it was really, really on the nose. It was there's a moment in the first episode where they go, oh, I really wish I could borrow more Ray Bradbury novels from you, and just really kind of just forcing these name drops. I mean, there's a point in it where a character pulls up in a car and the number plate of their car spells out Twin Peaks. And another one's got a number plate that spells out the X-Files. And it's just, for the first sort of 20 minutes, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, you are just trying so hard. And
it
it felt a lot like, and what it is, of grown men writing a script about teenage girls.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It felt very much, you know, there's that meme online of it, Steve Buscemi in a backwards baseball cap and a skateboard. Like, good day, fellow kids. Like,
yeah.
It felt like that to start with.
As long as it's not the Steve Buscemi eyes one on...
No.
That's just... that. Never been so unsettled in my life.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
So, the first sort of... Yeah, first 20 minutes, it felt like, hey, this is cool. Hey, look how cool we are. It's even got that fucking wanky, like, hand-drawn sort of title aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like, no straight lines. It's all kind of drawn in pencil and it's slightly animated and a bit kooky, and you look in this character's journal and it's got... Fuck it. And it's all hella this and hella that. And it's like proper, it's really cringe. The dialogue is really cringeworthy. But
there we go. I was waiting for the but.
But
I thought we were just gonna end there, and you'd be like, "Oh yeah, it's dog shite." So everything that I said at the start is completely.
Yeah, completely true. Don't waste your time. No, do spend your time playing this game, because once I realised what the game was, just I did a complete 180 on it,
mm-hmm.
and I really appreciated what it was trying to do, because it is, like we were saying, about being that kind of 19-year-old that wants to be cool.
Yeah.
So once I realised that that was the intention, I really fell in love with it, because it kind of was, and the character acted in the way that I would have acted if I were 18, 19.
Okay.
You know, wanting to be cool and wanting to be, look more cultured than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of ties in with the kind of main premise. Obviously, it's a choice-based game. Now, in the Telltale games, like The Walking Dead, a lot of these bigger choices are sort of timed. You know, you've got like 5 seconds to make a choice, and once you make it, that's it, and it's done, it's in stone. But obviously in this one, you can go back in time.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I wasn't sure if the choice-based system would be go back in time and revert this from happening now. Like, you'd see the event occur, and the choice would be do or don't affect what's just happened.
Yeah.
Go back and try and... Or if it would be a make the decision, but then after that fact, you can decide to...
So it's kind of a bit of both. As an example, and this is, it's all in the first episode, it's all for free, so I'm not really too fussed about spoiling it. There's a point towards the end of the first episode where you see a campus security guard harass one of the students.
Right.
And you've got your choice is take a photo, sort of take evidence, but don't really intervene, or step in and intervene and, you know, have a word,
yeah,
as it were. Either of those options. I think initially I decided to sort of stay out of it. It's not
coward,
my business.
Coward.
I knew it. So you snap the photo and you make this decision.
Yeah.
And then the student comes to you and goes, "Oh, thanks for that. Thanks for your help. You know, next time, why don't you try and do something?" And then your character's monologue, because a lot of the game is kind of played out in this character's head, like you've got a lot of internal monologue, is, "Oh, maybe I should have, maybe that wasn't the best idea, you know, I'm looking out for myself, but maybe I should have stepped up." So there's that kind of doubt.
Yeah.
So you go, oh, clearly the right thing to do was to step in. So you rewind time, you play it through again, and you step in, and then the student becomes, you know, is really grateful, but you get on the wrong side of the security guard, and he goes, "You know, if I see you around here again, there's going to be hell to pay." So then her monologue goes, "Oh, maybe I should have stayed out of it because this is going to cause me more trouble." There's no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
It's, you can rewind and do what you want, and you can rewind as many times as you want. And I think on that one, I did it 3 or 4 times. I was like, maybe this, no, maybe that, maybe this, maybe that.
But maybe if I do this, but then that.
Yeah. And
that will be that'll be the answer I need.
And I really like it because it's, I felt more tense in some of those choices than I did in any of The Walking Dead, kind of immediate, make a decision now. Because you've got that kind of teenage thing of wishing you could do something else.
Yeah.
You know, we've all had that moment where you walk up to like a popular group of people and you wish you knew...
Popular.
Well, you know what I mean. You wish you knew the name of something, or you wish you knew that person's name.
Yeah, of course.
Or you get into an argument with someone and then you walk away and go, "I wish I said that."
Yeah.
Well, this gives you the opportunity to do that. To, like, there's another moment where you forget a character's name, or you don't know a character's name, and she's like, "Oh, I bet you don't even know what I'm called." And you get it wrong, and she's like, "Oh, I knew it, you weren't listening, you're such a bitch." And so you rewind, and go, "No, of course I know your name, it's this."
Fucking hell. This sounds like High School Simulator.
It's brilliant, it is, and it's brilliant. And yeah, some of those decisions, those big kind of, you could do this or do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've felt more torn about so many of them. You think, oh, you know, wouldn't it be cool to be able to go back in time and undo all your mistakes?
So many films have taught me no.
Yeah.
The answer
exactly,
to that is no.
But if you do that, and if you think, yes, I'll do that, the alternative might not be any better.
Yeah.
And I'm really intrigued to see where this is going and what they're going to do with this and how they're going to tie in the kind of weird apocalyptic supernatural thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully see them sort of tone down on the really
on the cool little references.
Cool references, because
but I'm sure that's probably, you know, just setting up the premise of this is who this main character is and what she resonates with. But obviously, once you've established that first hurdle, I'm sure it would be more story.
Yeah, it's probably just setting the scene.
Story centric.
But it's weird. Like, I don't think I've played a game where I've sort of started and for the first half an hour really hated it.
And gone, then
around. This is shite. Yeah. Like, this is just reference simulator.
Yeah, yeah.
And then within, just like that, I'm in. Sweet. I want to do more of this.
Cool.
The first episode is free on any console. The season pass is like a tenner. If you're interested in like Walking Dead and that kind of stuff, do pick it up. If you've played it, let us know, because I'd really be interested to see, kind of, obviously after I've played more of it, what people think of it. Because I made a total 180 on it, and yeah,
fair play.
I really enjoyed it.
So on the note of that game, and something that I was thinking about asking at some point, anyway, you said that, you know, the game is essentially building towards a potential apocalyptic situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's very obvious. Literally the opening scene is your character witnesses this thing happen and then kind of snaps back to present day. So
okay.
It's very obvious that this is going to happen.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
There is something weird going on.
Okay. Are we getting to a point now where that is horrendously overplayed now, in that the main end goal of so many games now is
save the world,
prevent apocalypse, save world? And I know it's, I kind of feel like someone once wrote it at the top of a whiteboard in a pen that it doesn't
you
come
can't
off
rub it off,
and they wrote it in the wrong one, they put a Sharpie on there and they're like, shit, that's not going to come off.
Well, we might as well,
and it's kind of
now.
And it's kind of worn down a bit, but it's still at the top
still,
in like
still
big
it.
Giant capitals,
must save. I don't think so, because obviously that is a hallmark of a lot of games, especially a lot of your kind of blockbuster things. You know, I'm not going to rag on Call of Duty anymore.
they're not listening. Yeah. So
obviously it's a hallmark, because it's an easy thing to do, isn't it? Save the world.
Yeah.
You can create any kind of big bad, be it aliens, zombies, whatever, weird supernatural stuff, and it gives your character that kind of hero arc. Which, you know, is half the reason a lot of people play games, is to be the saviour of X or Y. But there are, you know, I think there are enough games out there at the moment that don't do that, or do that on a kind of much smaller scale.
Yeah. So just what I find now is that, you know, when I see a lot of these games and you see that, you know, you take a look at a game and you immediately know, you know, like, say, the new Gears of War or whatever.
Oh,
yeah. You think, right, okay, it's the same thing every
That's
time.
That's just going to be shooting lots of stuff.
And yeah, again, not to rag on that game, because I've played the first couple and enjoyed them both. And I think, unfortunately, they just kind of all mush together with
the same game.
It's four of
more,
the same game, but it's, you know, it's more than passable. But I think I find so many times now that's the big end goal. And like you said, there is the hero arc and the save the world or save the solar system or the universe or whatever, you know, with your Mass Effects and you're like, but they kind of miss
another
out
game with a great soundtrack.
Yes,
the Mass Effect soundtracks, especially the third one.
They kind of miss out on the why am I compelled to save the world, because a lot of the times you walk around, you're like, well, actually everyone in this world's a dickhead,
why do I want to save them?
And you kind of miss out on that personal narrative. And I think so many games are missing the opportunity where, like, the end goal or the end issue, the end event, is something that solely affects them and their lives and their friends, family. Shows you, not doesn't tell you, just shows you, like, look, here is this emotional rapport with these people who are centered around you, and if you don't do XYZ, then stuff will happen to them. This small number of,
it's interesting that you mentioned Mass Effect, because Mass Effect was one of those games for me. Obviously there is the big arc of you must save the galaxy from this invading alien force, and you as one person, as the chosen one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of being the chosen one in games, you know, I don't want to be this hero of everything. The thing with the Mass Effect games, especially the second one and the third one, is, well, the whole crux of the second one is recruit a crew of interesting characters for what is ostensibly a suicide mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the whole game is you building relationships with characters that you then care about. And I didn't give a fuck about the end of the world scenario. All I cared about was getting as many of those people that I've grown to be fond of,
yeah,
and formed attachments to. Oh, I didn't want any of them to die.
Yeah, through that last mission.
Yeah, and
which, I mean, how many times did we see that in our flat back in the day?
A good dozen?
Yeah.
At least.
For those of you who don't know, Simon and I used to live together in a flat with three other guys, and we had one Xbox 360 set up in the front room, and we'd basically, someone would buy a game and then everyone would,
four people would play
play it through. So I think everyone became pretty much au fait with every word in the Mass Effect 2 script very, very quickly. So we, you know, we saw this final end game. God knows how many times.
Dozens tried of to times. Keep
everyone alive, or,
you know, you were saying, you know, you want to see games that have just that personal impact. That's what the Mass Effects were for me, because I, you know, I didn't care about saving the world. I cared about keeping these people safe.
Yeah. And I guess it was clever enough to have the overall arc of Apocalypse, end of the world, but it was centered around your formative relationships with,
like, the best moments in the third game and the final one of the trilogy, because that's how trilogies work. were my
one now.
Yeah, Andromeda. That's gonna be fun.
Quadrilogy. Is that still?
No, it's not. It's not linked to the. It's same universe, different.
Ah, okay, right.
So kind of
okay.
the Rogue One to the main arc.
Same
universe, completely different sort of.
That's interesting.
Set of people.
Sweet.
But yeah, the third one. There are these moments where you have the opportunity to just catch up with these characters. And the kind of most famous one, probably one of the most famous characters in the Mass Effect games, Garrus. It's this kind of weird lizard bird looking man.
Yeah.
But he's awesome. And, like, so many, the internet loves him, and so many people love him for so many reasons. Like, he's awesome. He's great. I also was listening to another podcast.
No such thing. There's only us.
Another great podcast that you should listen to if you don't is Toku Podcast by two awesome people, Kate Gray and Holly Nielsen. Brilliant, funny, hilarious. They had me sort of cracking up on the bus on the way home from work, because part of one of their episodes is reading out really awful Mass Effect, like, sexy fan fiction.
Oh man, why is this not in my life?
It's amazing. It's great.
Fan fiction's the route to money now. Yeah. The E.L. Gray, the woman that spawned the 50 Shades
of, person.
Well, no, E.L.
James.
James, yeah.
How do I know this?
Yeah, that's disappointing, isn't it?
Anyway.
She wrote Twilight fan fiction.
Oh, she did?
That's how she got big on dem internets.
And then
someone was like, you should write some, you know, some new IP. And unfortunately,
she did. She took that advice.
But, I mean, she's...
She's rolling God in the money now. Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's what we should do. Maybe we should do some, like, radio-centred...
fan fiction.
Yeah.
Oh. But this, yeah, so... Anyway, that was a tangent. Toku Podcast, listen to it if you don't already. So Garrus, main character, well, one of the kind of key players in the Mass Effect series. And there's a moment in the third game which is, you know, you're gearing up for this final fight, this big climactic end game. But one of the best moments in the game, and it's sort of widely out there on the internet, is your character just taking a minute to just hang out. And just not, you know, nothing to do with the end game of the game, nothing to do with the final fight or anything. You're just hanging out with a friend, because you both realise, oh, actually, we could die tomorrow if this doesn't go well, so we're just going to hang out. And it was a really nice kind of intimate moment, which kind of meant so much more to me than
the rest of it.
Saving the world.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah. Yay for the apocalypse.
Yay for the apocalypse.
Note to self, band name. Yay for the apocalypse.
Actually, that would be quite fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Should we start band?
Let's do that. Yeah, let's sack off this podcast and let's start band.
We'll
do both. Okay.
And then use our podcast just solely to our band.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard, should we talk about a thing that happened in the wrestling world?
We should talk
a lot
thing.
about we've kind of done a complete mirror of what we did last week.
Yeah.
Of talking for about an hour about one thing and then kind of rushing to get something else in.
It's got to be done. It's something that we've both seen this week. So last weekend, as well as NXT TakeOver Toronto in the NXT universe, WWE's main roster had the Survivor Series pay-per-view, which is one of the big four, along with SummerSlam, The Rumble, and WrestleMania. The premise of most of the matches is 5-on-5 elimination-based matches. So,
In case people aren't aware, the main roster, WWE main roster, is now split into two camps. Team Raw, the red brand.
Yeah, which is on Monday nights.
And Team SmackDown,
which is the blue brand.
On Tuesday nights. So, yeah, the premise of Survivor Series is 5 singles wrestlers from Raw against 5 singles wrestlers from SmackDown.
Yeah.
5 tag teams from each brand and 5 female wrestlers from each brand. In a kind
I'm so glad we don't have to say divas anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in a bid for brand supremacy, which kind of really had no actual consequences at the end, which is really frustrating. But anyway, it was most of it. I mean, did you watch it all, or did you
just
watch the...
I phased in and out. I watched the 5-on-5 male superstar.
Which was one. I mean, it went on long.
Yeah.
It's like 50 minutes.
That it did go on quite a long time.
There were some good spots though. Shield reunion, which
sort of Shield reunion,
kind of happening a bit too often. I think, like, I'm glad there's still the odd tease here and there, but that's happened 2 or 3 times now in recent months, and I kind of think the reason that it will work is you do it very, very sparingly and with legitimate reason, rather than just for a quick 20-second moment with a crowd
a cheap pop, isn't it?
Like, but there were some fun moments. James Ellsworth,
the chinless wonder,
holding Braun Strowman's foot so he couldn't get in, but then getting absolutely murdered,
thrown off the stage from the table. That was fun.
But it was, I think, the most you can say about pretty much all of it was fun, but completely throwaway.
Yeah,
and they're treating it as such anyway, because you know the build up all of a sudden was, oh, let's forget everyone's hatred for each other on the most part, barring Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles. So everyone just focus on your hatred for this
for the other
brand,
people that you
which
don't
makes
interact
no,
with anymore.
Makes no sense. And then as soon as it's finished, there's no consequences.
Yeah. It was very much a kind of, it felt like, you know, in sitcoms you have the dream episode.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, all kind of pre-existing dynamics and relationships are kind of paused, and it's what if this?
Yeah.
Sort of alternate universe.
Yeah.
WWE.
And then at the end they're like, oh, don't worry about
no,
that.
No, that was just a dream.
It didn't actually happen. That's how they ended Crossroads. Remember Crossroads?
Never saw
back
Crossroads.
In the day? It was like it was kind of like your neighbor's Home and Away kind of style.
All I've got in my head now is it Blue? Meet you at the Crossroads.
Oh, that was Blazing Squad.
Blazing Squad, that was it.
Meet you at the Crossroads.
What a
tune.
Yeah,
that's not. So, yeah, we're going to do a cover for that song in our band, so you can hear that next episode. Yeah, so they did this whole series for years, and then literally the last episode they ever did, because they just like ran out of money or it was canned or whatever, they literally just said it was a dream. The whole thing was dreamt up by this woman that worked on a counter in like a supermarket.
Incredible.
And then you saw all the people she dreamt in their actual roles in the supermarket instead of this like fairly upmarket hotel.
Yeah. A bit like Lost. Although, you know, I love Lost. No, I love Lost. But you know, everyone's kind of main complaint about Lost was, oh, was it all just a dream? No, it wasn't. You just weren't paying attention.
Let's not start the internet on Lost again.
No. So I think the most interesting bit of Survivor Series was kind of a dream match, oddly enough.
Fantasy warfare
was billed as.
Yeah.
Was an immovable object, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Sort of.
The beast incarnate.
The beast incarnate.
The one in 21-1.
This kind of, almost like wrestling's cheat mode.
Yep. You know, no, absolutely right.
Imagine you create a wrestler in like a video game and the rules just don't apply to Brock Lesnar. He's above wrestling almost.
Yeah, I think he was legitimized entirely by his run in UFC, where he was heavyweight champion. He's not just a greasy guy in.
No, and he had a run in New Japan.
He did.
He was the IWGP heavyweight
champion. Yeah.
Pretty legit guy.
De facto unstoppable final boss.
Yeah. Wrestling's final boss, essentially, isn't he?
In WWE today.
He's the kind of Mike Tyson punch out.
Yeah. No, absolutely. He is indeed.
Version.
Yeah. You can fight everyone, but you're going to get.
You're going to get wrecked.
You're going to get ended at the last stage versus the returning Bill Goldberg. So he had a huge unbeaten run in the WCW days when they were actually a serious competitor.
He was the kind of proto Lesnar, wasn't he? Like,
yep, short, sharp matches where he would
they're very much built from the same mould of come out, wreck shit, leave.
Yeah, don't talk. Get in, get out, make sure everyone else is on the floor.
The commentators would refer to them as they don't get paid by the hour.
Absolutely. So they had a match, and bearing in mind, Goldberg's last match was 12 years ago.
Yeah, against
Lesnar. In a match that was widely panned as one of the worst.
Was that the Stone Cold guest referee?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I don't think anyone involved was happy with that.
No. Both Goldberg and Lesnar were on their way out at the time. They were both at the end of their contracts and were going to leave.
Austin quit as a result of that match as well.
Phoned it in, and the crowd realised that ASAP. Everyone was kind of like, right, this was shit last time out. Goldberg hasn't wrestled in 12 like, literally years. Hasn't wrestled since then. What the fuck?
Like, he has 10-year-old son who has never seen him wrestle.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So this match at Survivor Series was the first match his son, who, you know, young child but not super young, the first time he's seen his dad wrestle. Mm.
It was built as this two huge wrecking machines coming together, but was built up in a way where I was genuinely intrigued at the very least to see what they would put on.
And it felt like this was going to be a kind of colossal match, like it was going to be a big match, which was going to be pretty hard fought, pretty even, but then it happened.
It did, and to say it happened is about accurate in the sense of it started, it happened, and it ended in
90 seconds?
Yeah. Less than. There is not a single person on the planet that predicted this in advance, and anyone that comes out from the woodwork and says, I thought WWE might pull that, is chatting absolute horseshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, the match started. Lesnar started in a way he often does, in overpowering his opponent into the corner, but then got
knocked on his ass.
Yeah, within next to no time, and sort of smiled about it. There was that moment of like, this is how it's going to be. Sweet. And then got
wrecked.
Yeah, speared twice. The first spear in particular looked great. Like, it looked legitimate.
Yeah.
And then, Goldberg set up for his patented finisher, the jackhammer, which involves taking someone up into a suplex position and then driving them down. And bearing in mind, Brock Lesnar is a humongous man. Yeah.
Almost 400 pounds? 350?
Yeah. So I thought, right, is he going to get him up? After the two spears, I thought, right, he's going to go for that, but he's not going to be able to pick him up, and then the match is going to start afresh, as it were, with Lesnar on the offensive.
But he hit it.
I've seen videos of people just absolutely losing their shit when that happened. Still thinking, even when that happened, I still thought, well, he's going to kick out, like, because Lesnar is the big bad.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was going to be like a 2.9 count.
Yeah,
this crowd's going to be like, oh my god! Right now we are into this.
But no, it just went 2-3.
It was over,
and that was it.
And the whole horizon of WWE now has kind of been torn apart.
Yeah,
in that the biggest of big bads was beaten in 90 seconds by a guy who's literally not been around for 12 years.
It's mental.
Which begs the question of, are they just doing it for a moment?
Maybe.
For a thing that got the crowd mental for 5 seconds. Well, longer than 5 seconds, yeah. But going to get them mental, going to get them talking. It's all now about
for like a WrestleMania payoff?
Yeah.
Almost.
You know, how do they contend with that going on? I assume Lesnar's going to be off TV for a while.
There's rumours of Goldberg wanting a title run.
He's going to be in the
Rumble. He's in the Rumble. So, sort of forecasting forward, you've got to think maybe Brock eliminates him from the Rumble. Then that sets up for like a final confrontation at Mania.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That looks like the
with an actual match.
Easiest course of action.
Mm-hmm.
But how good would it be? How amazing would it be if the Mania match was just Goldberg going over Brock really quickly? Because what I loved about that match, Goldberg Lesnar, was it was a complete mirror of possibly the best match ever.
I know where this is going.
SummerSlam 14, Lesnar versus John Cena, who is another one of those kind of unstoppable, unbeatable
superhero.
So much so it's become a meme of, you know, Cena wins. And people, you know, went into this match, SummerSlam 2014, feeling like it was going to be a kind of, again, an even battle, an even fight. And much in the same way, Lesnar just manhandles Cena.
Yeah.
Just suplex after suplex.
It was the same as Goldberg Lesnar, but dragged out to 15 minutes of
just being
absolute destruction. Which, again, there was not a single person who, you know, people could obviously have picked Lesnar to win. There's no one that picked it in that manner. And the crowd was, the different one about that one was, obviously with Goldberg Lesnar, it was so quick and so in your face immediately that the crowd just went insane. Yeah. The pop was huge. People were beside themselves, like, oh my God, what have we just
There
seen?
Wasn't really much time to react to it, was there?
No.
It was just, what the fuck just happened?
Whereas if you watch SummerSlam 14 back, it's kind of like an awed hush because no one really knows. Everyone's, I think, all the smarks out there.
Yeah, they expect.
Were kind of expecting for like Cena to come back out of nowhere and get the win. I think there's a moment where he gets him in the STF.
Yeah, he gets like one bit of offense in.
But the rest of the time, when Lesnar is just brutalizing him, the crowd are just like, right, what the fuck is going on? And it's not loud, it's not a huge reaction. Even when he wins, everyone's a bit like,
it's kind of, it's an awed silence, isn't it? It's kind of, oh, what did we just,
so
what happened?
So it's quite interesting that they can basically do the same thing twice, just with obviously time duration difference, but it provokes such entirely different reactions from those watching.
Like, before SummerSlam 14, or actually since then, that set up Lesnar as this just kind of unbeatable machine. Like, the only people that have beat him in sort of singles matches since was The Undertaker and Cena.
Yeah. And did Cena beat him after that?
Yeah, they had a kind of title match, I think, at Night of Champions.
Right.
So the only two people to beat Lesnar in a kind of almost 3-year period was the untouchable superhero babyface face of the company, and The Undertaker, who's this sort of 25-year veteran, kind of the probably greatest living professional wrestler ever.
I mean, he's up there.
I would say so.
Without doubt.
And then for this guy who hasn't wrestled for 12 years to rock up, first match back, just trounces the guy in 90 seconds. Like I said, it just leaves this kind of vacuum at the top of what the fuck happens now.
Yeah, it could be great. It could go to a really great place. Whether it will or not. But I mean, that's kind of the WWE in a nutshell, really, isn't it?
Could be great.
It could be great.
If it doesn't.
They often choose to not make it great, but,
yeah,
you know, it's an interesting ride, whatever it is.
What will be great just very quickly before we finish, because I think we should finish soon.
Absolutely. We do tend to talk on.
We do rabbit on quite a bit. 205 Live.
Shit, yes.
This Tuesday.
Is it this week?
This week. Premieres this week.
Right.
Which last week, obviously, we sung the praises of NXT and this thing called the Cruiserweight Classic. 205 Live is WWE's attempt at making the Cruiserweight division an actual thing.
Which they've thus far really, really failed to do.
They've just not done it.
They've been like, well, we won't give you a story, but we'll just make you a 6-man tag match and hope that everyone loves it. Also, don't do all the stuff that
Don't do all the flippy shit.
Exciting and intriguing in the CWC.
Yeah, just different.
Just wrestle the
wrestle
same
our way, wrestle the WWE way. But hopefully 205 Live, their kind of flagship Cruiserweight show, should give them that space to just do
just focus on some interesting storylines, obviously more so than one guy is the champion and obviously everyone have else, that, but there needs to be other engaging things, going on. Things.
Yeah.
People need to get their characters across because they're not being given the chance to do that at the minute. It's just, TJP likes video games and makes video games references, which
he's basically Brian Kendrick is a pirate. Apparently.
Yeah. Does have amazing trousers.
Rich Swann likes dancing.
He does. That's kind of it. So they need to have this opportunity to actually develop their characters, which is, again, a similar proving ground to NXT, but focused on a certain style. But also, we need some of these new people that, or not new people, but people they've signed that haven't debuted yet.
So Tozawa's,
Jack Gallagher.
I was going to say, in the vignettes for 205 Live, the first person you see on the ad is Akira Tozawa, who we haven't seen since the CWC. Jack Gallagher, who wrestles such a different style to anyone I think we've ever seen.
Yeah. It goes fully back to like the world of sports wrestling of like
the catch wrestling, as
it stands. Yeah, and it wasn't even necessarily that everything he did was wildly different to anyone else. It was just his presentation of it was that bit different. Was that... he came in with the very English gentleman.
Yeah. Twizzled moustache.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's just his presentation, his way of connecting with the crowd was just unreal. And I want him on my TV screen.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So yeah, it'll be fun. And I think...
I hope so. I hope, again, this is something that I really hope they manage to stick the landing on, because it could be fantastic.
It could be great.
If it goes anywhere along the lines of CWC, which worked out better than I think anyone was ever expecting.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there was a supreme amount of talent in there that some of which haven't been signed on.
I don't think anyone expected it to be as well received as it was.
No.
I think they expected it to be this niche little thing that maybe a couple hundred people watch.
Yeah.
But it became this sensation.
Yeah. And it not only made names of people who had been around a little while,
And equally, like people that hadn't, like Noam Dar. He's 23.
Yeah.
And is now a main roster wrestler.
He is. Obviously, debuting in Scotland was a masterstroke.
Yeah.
It's Oasis themed.
An Oasis themed wrestler.
Yeah. Champagne Super Knee Bar is his...
probably the greatest name for a finishing move, I think.
It's
up there.
If you've got anything better, let us know. But I think that's
Champagne Super Knee Bar is
it's very
a masterstroke.
Yeah. The one other shout out I will give, and we did sit and watch it after we watched Takeover Toronto, is Lucha Underground, which, again, for those who don't know, is a separate wrestling promotion based out of LA. But it is Lucha Libre inspired, so there's a lot of mask wrestlers. It has its own individual style. There's incredible high flyers like I've never seen.
Yeah, there's stuff there I've never seen anywhere else.
But it is not afraid to be supremely dramatised and faintly ridiculous, but aware of its own ridiculous nature. So it's more of a scripted drama where wrestling happens to be there. It happens to be in a wrestling setup. Yeah. But, you're talking about there's people who are from separate clans of 2,000-year-old Aztec heritages. There's
a guy who is the literal embodiment of death.
Yeah.
Guy who's the actual dragon.
Who has taken the soul of other people. Yep, there's a woman from a snake clan, there's a guy from a dragon clan. The previous champion was the caged brother of the owner of the promotion.
It's not afraid to be different, is it?
No, but the wrestling and the standard of it is unreal and has been from pretty much the minute it started. It's not something I've watched a huge amount of because it's quite difficult to actually get hold of over here. But
it's on iTunes.
But it wasn't not in iTunes UK.
Oh, fair enough.
So if you're listening overseas,
get on
lucky
that.
You. But Aztec Warfare 3, which is their Rumble equivalent, was last week. Week before last, sorry. And if you can find that, then watch the hell out of it. Because it makes the Rumble look...
And an incredible ending. I think a pretty significant ending as well, which I think is definitely the subject of which I think we will talk about.
Yeah, no, I think we will.
I think it's something that we maybe need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I had some interesting conversations after last week about the subject.
Yep.
Do yourself a favour. Try and hunt down, Lucha Underground, Aztec Warfare 3. Get on it.
Absolutely. Do it. Cool. before it disappears.
Yeah. So, I think we should wrap this up.
Yeah, it's getting dark outside. It's cold.
I've got dinner to put on. So, thanks for listening. Obviously, if you enjoy what you've heard, like, share, subscribe this. So we're on SoundCloud/ Finishing Moves Podcast. We're on Facebook, same thing, Finishing Moves Podcast. Twitter, Finishing_Moves, because Twitter won't let you have a username that long. We're also on iTunes now. So if you have iTunes, if you use iTunes, search us up there, subscribe, leave us a review and a rating. Share it if you like it. Share it with people you like. If you haven't liked this, share it with people you don't like.
Force them to listen to 70 minutes of
nerds talking about video games.
Games and wrestling.
Yeah. Also, I should definitely give a shout out to Kim from the Yogscast, who is kind enough on Twitter to give us a bit of a boost. So hopefully some of you are hearing us for the first time off her recommendation. So thank you, Kim, for that. Cool. That's about it.
It is. So we'll see you hopefully, probably again this time next week.
Yeah.
I don't see why we won't find things to talk about in the next.
We'll try
days.
And at least do this maybe every fortnight.
At the very least, I reckon. Yeah, we'll be able
hopefully
to
weekly.
Yeah.
If not fortnightly.
Yeah.
Or as Americans say, bi-monthly, which is really confusing.
Fucking Americans. Unless we talk about them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Last week you picked a fight with Canada.
I did.
Now you're picking a fight with America.
I did.
We should start this now.
Yeah, but then whichever one actually starts to fight back, okay. I'll dislike them. But then I'll just like the other one. It's a way of picking sides without me actually doing it. I'll just wait for one of them to start shit with me.
On that note.
Yeah.
See you later.
Take care.
Bye.